Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, Love and Honor. This is 2 Samuel 1. So I want you to think about a couple of things as we're going through this story today. How good of a friend are you? Are you easy to be around? Are you pleasant to be around? Do people enjoy your company? And then your enemies, or the people that you don't like, you wish them harm? Are you glad when bad things happen to them? And lastly, your leaders. Are you willing to trust that God has the ability to put people in leadership positions and take them out at His will? And that you just need to respect the person that is in the office at the time, regardless of whether you like them or you don't like them. Let God deal with it. Is that something that you can do? These are all things that we're going to be talking about today in our story as we find out that David has learned of Saul's death. And so let's just go ahead and get right into it. Now, if you remember, David had been living in the land of the Philistines because King Saul had been trying to kill him. Saul got jealous of David and how much the people loved him and how they thought he was such a good warrior. And it got in his head. And finally, he's like, I just want to get rid of this guy. And at first, he was kind of trying to do it secretly. And then eventually, he's like, no, full-fledged, getting an army, going after him. I want him dead. And so this has run David out of Israel, and he's living in the land of the Philistines. Now, the Philistine king of Gath, he believes that David has actually defected from his country of Israel and is fighting for them now. But he's not. He is actually fighting for the Israelites in the land of the Philistines. It's just so far away from the king of Gath that he doesn't know. But when all of the Philistines decided to go up north and fight against the Israelites over the Jezreel Valley, he, the king of Gath, asked David to come along with him because he thought that he really had turned away from the Israelites and he wanted him to fight with them. But whenever the other four kings of the land of the Philistines heard that David was coming, they didn't trust him. And they're like, no way, we don't want him here. And so the king of Gath sent him back to his hometown that he had given him in the southern part of the land of the Philistines, which was called Ziklag. But when David and his men got to Ziklag, they found that their whole town had been destroyed by the Amalekites, and they had carried away their women and children. And so David and his men went down, defeated the Amalekites, got their women and children, and brought them back to Ziklag. And after he had been there 3 days, a man came from the camp of the Israelites to David. And he was had his clothes torn and dirt on his head, which would be a sign of mourning. So before he even speaks to David, it's like, I am distraught. He's trying to display this to David. And then when he approaches David, he bows down to him in honor. And David looks at him and says, hey, where did you come from? And he said, I came from the camp of the Israelites. And he said, okay, what happened in the battle? And the man says, sadly, the Israelites are on the run, and many of them have died, including Saul and his son Jonathan. And David is like, how do you know this for certain? And he said, well, I happened to be on the mountain and saw Saul mortally wounded. And he called out to me and said, hey, I am about to die. Please put me out of my misery. And he said, I looked at him and there was no way he was going to survive from these wounds. And so I did. I killed him so that he didn't suffer. And look, I took his crown and I took the armlet that the soldiers would wear on their arm. And you can see that they do belong to the king. And he showed them to David. And this is not even true. This is not the true story, because we found out at the end of 1 Samuel that what actually happened to Saul is, yes, he was mortally wounded, and he did also ask that someone put him out of his misery, but it wasn't this guy. He asked his armor bearer to kill him, and he refused because he's like, there's no way I'm killing God's anointed king. And so Saul killed himself. It says that Saul fell on his own sword and killed himself. So apparently this guy saw this happen, and instead of just relaying that information to David, he apparently thought David would be happy with the man who, you know, killed the guy that was trying to kill him. And also, you know, that he was being merciful to the king. You know, it looks as if he is, you know, benefiting both Saul and David by being merciful to Saul and by getting rid of the threat for David. And this guy's kind of been doing this the whole time, because right when he approaches David, he looks as if he is mourning Saul. So that would be honorable to Saul. And then he bows down to David, honoring him. So he looks like he's honoring both kings, the old king and the one that he believes will be the new king. But really, he just seems to be seeking honor for himself, because he's going to David presumably because he thinks David will be proud of him for this. Otherwise, he wouldn't have lied about it. And David senses this. He can tell that this man is not a good actor. You know, he is actually kind of coming to him in a state of complete irreverence and disrespect. You know, it's like he doesn't seem to have any regard for the fact that he just killed the king. Even though, yes, he's putting him out of his misery, he doesn't seem solemn about it. You know, he displayed his solemnness whenever he was putting the ashes on his head and tearing his clothes. But his demeanor, once he begins to speak to David, is almost gossipy. It's like, this is what happened. Oh, listen, this is what happened in the battle. And he thinks that David is going to praise him. But David is distraught. He, it says, begins to cry. He tears his own clothes. He fasts. And he is just so upset for what has just happened to Israel's king, for what has happened to Saul and to his best friend, Jonathan. And so he is really confused as to why this guy would think that this is a good thing. And so he asks him, where are you from? Now, this man has already told him that he is an Amalekite. So what he really is asking is, where have you been living? You know, you may have been from the Amalekite territory, but where have you been living that you would be fighting with the Israelites and not be aware of the fact that, you know, as someone living amongst the Israelites, you are supposed to be going by their rules. You're supposed to know what God has chosen, which is this man to be the king. You also should know that I love Saul and I love Jonathan, and I would never be okay with this. I left the whole nation of Israel to keep from killing him myself because he was trying to kill me, and I didn't want to have to kill him in self-defense. So I would never be okay with this. So how do you not know this? Where have you been all of this time? And the man says, well, I'm a nomad from the land of the Amalekites, and I've been living amongst the Israelites. And so David's like, yeah, well, then you should have known better. I don't know why you thought I would be happy about this, but this is not praiseworthy. You do not have the right attitude. And he ordered that he be executed. And the way that you are supposed to execute people, give them the death penalty for a murder case, is that there has to be 2 to 3 witnesses that say that the person did it. But no need for that here, because the man himself came to tell that he did it. And so as David sentences him to death, he says, you brought this on yourself because you admittedly killed the king. This is not praiseworthy. This is something you should have never done. And so you're a murderer, and I am sentencing you to death. After this, David writes a song Remember, David, that is what he's done his whole life. He was a shepherd of his father's sheep, and he had his harp out there, and he would play music and write songs. And then he was called to Saul's service in the very beginning to play for him, to lift his spirits with his music. And so David is a songwriter at heart. And so he writes a song for Saul and Jonathan, and ask that this song be written in the book of Jasher for the Israelites to always remember the king, the very first king, and his son, and how they have fought valiantly and been good for the nation of Israel. And this book of Jasher, as far as we can tell, is a book of war songs. And so this is the song that David wrote. I'm going to read it. We're going to go through it, you know, kind of stanza by stanza, and see what it is that he is singing about for this funeral song for in memory of David, of Saul and Jonathan. So this is 2 Samuel 1, beginning in verse 19. And he starts the song by saying, "Your glory, O Israel, is slain on your high places, how the mighty have fallen." And so he's just mourning what has happened to the nation of Israel, that they, you know, their people were killed and their mighty men are gone. And then the next line, verse 20, says, "Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon. Lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, let the daughters of the uncircumcised exult." And so the first thing that I want you to see is that he says everything twice in a different way. A lot of this is because this is a poem, a song, and so they do that sometimes. But also it is to, you know, stress how important he feels these things are, and for sake of clarity. So when you say things a couple of times in different ways, you're saying, this is really important, I want you to get it, and I'm going to say it in a different way so that if you didn't understand it the first time, you'll understand it the second time. And so he says, you know, don't tell Gath, which is, you know, one of the Philistine cities, or publish it in the streets of Ashkelon, which is also a Philistine city. Basically, I wish that the people of the land of the Philistines could not say that they killed and got the Israelites on the run. You know, this is not something that I want. Obviously, they already know this, but he's like, oh, don't tell them. You know, this song is not for them. I don't want them to know, you know, to even be reminded that this has happened to them. And he uses these two cities, because Gath is the easternmost city and Ashkelon is the westernmost city. And so he's basically using this to represent the whole of the land of the Philistines. So he's saying, I don't want the people living in the land of the Philistines to ever hear this song, because they don't need to be reminded that they've done this, because if they do, then the daughters of their daughters will rejoice and the daughters of the uncircumcised will exult. So saying that again in two different ways. They're going to be happy about this. I don't even want them to even remember that this happened. And then he curses the mountain that Saul and Jonathan died on. He says in verse 21, "You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon you, and no fields of offering." So he's like, no rain for you. I want everything on the mountain to die. You don't get to be blessed because my king died on you, on your land. And then he curses Saul's shield. He says, "For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil." And so he's saying it's defiled. It's basically useless because it didn't serve its purpose. You know, the shield is supposed to protect Saul, but it did not do this. And so it's completely useless. And he's cursing it. And The oil is what they would use to clean the shield, but also to protect it. And so he's kind of using a play on words here, saying, you know, that oil might have protected the shield, but the shield did not protect the person that it was supposed to. Therefore, it's defiled. It's useless. You're cursed too. You and the mountain. And then he turns his focus to Saul and Jonathan in verses 22 and 23. And he says, from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. So, first of all, they say that when they would use the words, the blood and the fat together, this is representing the sacrifices. So, you know, the blood that the people were not allowed to eat, they had to spill on the ground, and the fat that they had to burn to God, and they also weren't allowed to eat. Those were the things that were given up to God. And so when they would use these things, they're talking about a sacrifice. And so what he was trying to reiterate here is that Jonathan's bow hit the fat of these mighty warriors and killed them. And Saul's sword slain them and spilled their blood. And so he's saying both of these mighty warriors sacrificed many of God's enemies to him, offered them up to him before they died. So he's praising them as mighty warriors, which is very ironic because this is what Saul got jealous of David for in the first place, because initially Saul was a mighty warrior and everyone saw him as such and they praised him for that. But then when he became the king and David began fighting for them, then the people started saying, Saul has killed thousands, but David has killed tens of thousands. And this upset Saul and made him jealous of him. But David is like, no, you were a mighty warrior, you know? And if Saul could have just accepted that David was fighting on his behalf and taken credit for it as the king, then everything would have been good. It's like, when I was fighting, then y'all were successful, and now I've got you this other guy, and he's fighting, and now we're successful. But Saul could never do that. But David isn't insulting him in return, saying, yeah, you aren't as good of a warrior as me. He's like, no, you were a good warrior, and the people should remember you as that. And so he goes on to say, Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, in life and in death you were not divided. They were swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. So you're fast, you're strong, you killed many. You are great, valiant warriors. And then he calls them beloved and lovely. So beloved meaning people love you, and lovely meaning you're worthy of that love. You are lovable. And so even though Saul has been trying to kill him, he's like, everyone loves you. I love you. And y'all are lovable people, both of you. You are going to be missed. And then he says, in life and in death, they were not divided. And you're kind of like, well, they kind of were divided, because Jonathan got very angry with Saul for wanting to try to kill David. And he stood up from the table and he refused to eat, and Saul threw something at him. They had this big fight. And then Jonathan left, let David escape. Saul knew that Jonathan had let David escape. And so they did have a rift, and so you're thinking, well, they were divided, but they weren't, because they didn't let that separate them. Even though they had arguments, they both just went their own way and did what they believed to be best, and then still were a family. And in life and in death, they were together because they were fighting unto the death together. And so he praises them as warriors. He praises them as a united family, and that says that they are loved. And then he says in verse 24, you daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. So what he's trying to say is, mourn your king, mourn your king. He has made you a great nation. He has made you important and valuable. People look at you that way, and that's because of him. And so don't forget your first king. He's been great for your nation. And then he seemingly ends the song in the way that he started it in verse 25 by saying, how the mighty have fallen in the midst of this battle. Same as he said up there at the first, how the mighty have fallen. But then he's like, I can't end the song because I love Jonathan and I need one more little stanza just for him. And so he says, Jonathan lies slain on your high places. I'm distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. So this word distressed literally means tight or constricted. And so what he's trying to say is, it feels like the life is being squeezed out of me right now. I'm just so, so distraught about your death because you're my best friend. And we have had an extraordinary friendship. He seems to be saying that there is nothing negative about you for me. Everything has been pleasant about being your friend. And I miss you deeply. I wish that it would not have turned out like this. And then he says, your love even surpasses that of women. At first you're like, what does that mean? But when he's saying that he's been pleasant to him and his love is extraordinary, I think he's saying, you know, I've had difficulties in every other relationship, you know, other relationships, which if you're married or in a relationship, you know that your relationships are not always pleasant. You know, you can't say that about if you're a man, you cannot say that about your relationship with your wife. The women are not always pleasant. And, you know, sometimes they're difficult. Sometimes they're dramatic. Sometimes you have problems with them. And so he's saying, none of that with you. That's what I think he's saying here. Everything has been positive in my relationship with you, unlike any other relationship that I've ever had. And so then he ends the song by saying, how the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished. And he's calling them the weapons of war. He's saying, the mighty people have fallen. Saul and Jonathan are dead. So as you can see, he's not happy. He's mourning Israel. He's mourning her king. He is mourning his best friend. And he writes this song out of love for them, puts it in the book of Jasher, and says, I want all of Israel to know this song and remember the first king fondly. So let's go back over, first of all, this relationship with Jonathan, because it is very extraordinary. If it is better than any relationship he's ever had, and if it is all positive, that is pretty extraordinary, because you can't have a lasting relationship that is 100% positive, I wouldn't think. It would be pretty difficult. But he's saying that is the way it is with him. And so what can we take from that? You know, are we good friends? Are we always pleasant? I bet not, right? I bet we're not always pleasant. But if we want our interactions with people to be at least mostly positive as to negative, then we need to try to be people that other people want to be around, right? Not be difficult, not cause drama in their life, not suck the life out of them, try to make them, have to meet our needs all the time and not do things for them. Things like that. Be loyal, be protective, have a care for them more than you care for yourself. These are all things that Jonathan has done for David if we look back over their relationship, the things that we know about them. And so that's the first thing that we can learn from this story is we want to be people that others can say, you are loved and you are lovable. Everything about my interaction with you has been positive, or at least most of it. And so we should strive to be that kind of person. Speaking of marriage, you know, sometimes when you get married, you are so comfortable with that person and you're around them so often that you forget to be pleasant. You know, sometimes we're frustrated or upset or tired or whatever, and we forget that the person that spends the most time with us would like for us to be pleasant, right? And so these are things that we need to strive for in all of our relationships as best we can. And so I'm going to read you a few verses that have to do with this. Proverbs 15:18 says, "A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention." So that's the kind of person we want to be, someone that is slow to anger, that doesn't, you know, make everything contentious all the time, who doesn't stir up strife. Proverbs 17:9 says, "Whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends." So don't go around talking ugly about people, because it's not going to make them happy if they find out the things that you've been saying behind their backs. Proverbs 17:17, "A friend loves at all times." Proverbs 18:24, "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." That's the kind of friend we want to be, is the kind that sticks closer than a brother, and that's the kind that we want in return. That's what David and Jonathan were for each other. And then Proverbs 22:10-11, "Drive out a scoffer and strife will go out, and quarreling and abuse will cease." So we don't want to be the kind of person that people want to drive out, you know, and so don't be that person. Instead, in verse 11, "He who loves purity of heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king as his friend." What a wonderful thing to know, is that if you are pure at heart and gracious in your speech, you can have the king as your friend. Basically, it's like everyone's going to love you, even important people. And then John 15:12-13 says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone laid down his life for his friends." Sacrificial friendship. The kind of person that would do anything for you, that would protect you with their life, that would give of themselves just for you. Jonathan did that. Jonathan was willing to, you know, yield to David as the king, even though, you know, he could have possibly been the successor. He's like, no, I'm giving up the throne, even any rights that I might would have to you, because I love you and I know that you're the one that's supposed to be the actual king. And so sacrificial love. It's the kind that Jesus had for us. That's why he says, love like I loved you. And it's the kind that he wants us to have for others. And then Galatians 5:14 says, "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And then the last one, 1 Peter 4:8-10 says, "Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve others." When we love each other, then we can forget the things that others do against us. That's what it means when it says love covers a multitude of sins. And then it tells us, you know, do good to others, serve them, be hospitable, and don't gripe about it. You know, be there for other people. These are all things that make us good friends. And so that's what we can learn from the relationship with Jonathan and David. What about David's reaction to hearing about Saul's death? He executed this man because he lacks reverence for the king and for God's choice. He also doesn't want to be associated with killing Israel's first king, or, you know, God's chosen king. And he takes absolutely no joy in this whatsoever. And he also doesn't want anyone to remotely think that he wanted this, you know, that he wanted Saul to die so that he could take the kingship. Because if the people believe that, then they're not going to accept him as their new king. And he didn't need to do that, because God had already promised that he was going to be the king one day. So there's no reason for him to hurry it up by violence. God is going to give him that in his own time and in his own way. And if God's giving it to him, he doesn't have to take it prematurely, right? And so he's trusting that God is going to do things in his own time and his own way. And he respects that Saul is the king until God removes him. He's not going to remove him, and he's going to let God do that, and he's going to respect him as the king until he isn't any longer, and he wants the people to do the same thing. And so that got me to thinking about us. First of all, do we take joy in the pain of people that have hurt us? It would have been easy for David to take joy in the fact that the man that's been trying to kill him is now dead. You know, that makes full sense. But he doesn't do that at all. I'm sure that's why the man thought he would be happy about it, right? But he's not. And so we shouldn't be either. We shouldn't be taking joy in the pain of anyone, even people we don't like or people that have been trying to hurt us. But more in this part of the story, what we can learn is that we should respect God's timing and God's way of doing things. We trust God to raise up leaders and remove leaders according to his time and his way. And are we willing to respect and follow them until God removes them? Or are we like, I don't care, I don't accept you as my leader, I'm not going to do what you say. Listen to what it says in Romans 13, 1-7. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God, and those who exist have been instituted by God. And so God, in like our government nowadays, he may not select our actual leaders. You know, we get to vote on those things, and so we select those leaders. But he has instituted government in itself and given people authority in government. He's given people authority in administratively. He's given them authority legislatively. He's given them authority to execute the laws and make judgments on them. And so we are supposed to respect the authorities that God has put in place and then just use our means to either push back on them or to, you know, stand up for the things that we believe in with our votes and with our voice. But we do have to respect the people that are in office and pray that God will remove those people if there's a reason to, and work within the system as best we can, because God has set that up. Verse 2, therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who will resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror of good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, then be afraid, because he doesn't bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger of the one who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjugation, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all who what is owed them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to those who respect is owed, and honor to those whom honor is owed. And so this stands for our government, which they've set up. It also stands for our church leaders who God has appointed and has the ability to remove or raise up. 1 Peter 2, 13-17 says, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to the governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. This is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone. Love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. So respect the authorities, work within the system to, you know, get rid of them or lift them up, but respect them while they're in the office. Now, another thing that we can learn from David is that he set aside his own personal difficulties with Saul for the good of the nation. And he specifically says he has been good for the nation. And we know this because we've been following. And you know, Saul is the one who instituted the very first trained army. They'd never had that before. They came in as a collective men into the land of Israel and fought together. But once their territory separated, then they haven't been this united and they haven't had a trained military. And Saul is the one who gave them that. The time of the judges, there was no real unity for them as a nation and no trained military. And they have all of that because of Saul. That's the reason that he says, you know, he's clothed you in gold and in luxurious scarlet, because he's saying, this man has benefited you. You know, he fought off your enemies. He made you important, and you owe a lot to him. Even though it might have benefited David for Saul to be dead, because Saul's not trying to kill him anymore, it didn't benefit the nation for their enemies to have killed their king. That's definitely not a good thing for the nation. And so he is caring more about the nation than he is himself. And so are we able to do that? Are we able to set aside our own personal issues with a leader for the good of the rest of the people? You know, are we able to look past those things and say, you know, maybe I've had difficult times with them, but they've been good for other people. They've done good things for a lot of people. And as a nation, they've done good things. And I'm going to focus on those things and not on the things that he's done for me. This isn't about me. This is about the whole nation or the whole church or the whole community or whatever. Are we able to do that? And if we are we willing to say it publicly? Are we willing to publicly say about someone that we have had problems with, hey, I may not agree with everything about them, but I agree with this. You know, this is one of the things that I think they're doing a good job on. Or I can see why those people would like him because he has benefited them in this way, and that makes sense to me. I personally just don't like the rest of the things, you know, and understand that the leader may be good for some other people. And then keep our own negative things to ourselves, you know. Don't advertise to everybody all of the negative things, you know. You don't want them to think bad of this person, because no point. You know, they've done a lot of good things. Let's focus on those. Proverbs 10:12 says, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. That's what we want to do. If we are going to be loving towards other people, then we want to cover their offenses. We don't want, you know, to walk around blabbing about all the bad things that they've done and causing contention and problems. And then, do we desire the best for other people, even though selfishly, it would be better for us if, you know, maybe something bad happened to them? Philippians 2:1-4 says, if there's any encouragement in Christ, any comfort of love, participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being the same mind, having the same love, being of full accord and one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to your own interests, but to the interest of others. So what he's saying is, I want you to be unified. I want you to care about the collective more than you care about yourself. And I want you to look individually to other people and say, hey, you're important, and I'm going to set my own needs aside for yours. That's what David did here, and that's what we should do also. And then lastly, David didn't just care about Israel, and he didn't just respect the office. He loved Saul. You know, he had no problems with Saul. Saul's the one that had a problem with him, and it's just because he got jealous. He used to be Saul's family, basically. He lived there with him and Jonathan like they were family. And so he didn't want to have a problem with him. He had to leave the whole country because of Saul. But now he's free to grieve him and their relationship and the person that he loved. And you know, sometimes whenever people are attacking us, whenever people are hurting us, whenever someone has betrayed us or caused us pain, we are so busy defending ourselves or protecting ourselves that we might forget, I actually care about this person. This is a person that I used to have really good relationship. We had good times together. I love them. But if we could possibly get away from the situation long enough to stop having to defend ourselves, then we might be able to say, I'm not going to protect myself anymore. I'm going to risk the fact that I might get hurt again, and I'm going to go to that person. I'm going to try to reconcile because I do love them. And, you know, we have a problem with each other because of this one thing that happened, but it's just been this one thing, and I really want to fix it because I care about them. That might be the catalyst to healing our relationship, just getting a little bit of distance and remembering, hey, I love them, and I don't want this fight. And, you know, sadly, this doesn't happen for them until Saul has passed away, but maybe it could happen for us if we would just take a little bit of time, sit down, think about it, and say, I'm not going to protect myself anymore. I love this person. This is the reason that I love them, and I'm going to try to make this work. And so David did the right thing, right? The other man thought that he was going to be happy. He thought that, you know, it only made sense to him, but David didn't act in the way that would be natural to everyone to act. And he said, no, I take no joy in this. Take no joy in his pain. I take no joy in the fact that their enemies just killed the king. I definitely take no joy in the fact that my best friend has passed. And so none of this is good news for me. And those are all things that we can take away from this lesson today. So that is all I have. If you want this written lesson where you can study it a little bit deeper, you can go to livethroughjesus.substack.com and you can get that lesson there for $6 a month or $60 a year. This lesson and every past lesson you will have access to once you subscribe there. And then weekly, you'll get a new one emailed to you. Digitally, the studies are great because you can click on the scriptures. You can change them to whatever Bible version you want. It's much faster than flipping through the Bible, and everything is just right there on your device. You can also get the lessons and do them with a big group, and it's very inexpensive because you can just get one subscription and then print out all your materials. So that is one option if you want to do that. But even if you don't want to pay, go to livethroughjesus.substack.com and subscribe, become a free subscriber, because I also do blog posts with each one of these lessons, and they just talk about how we can apply the lesson to our lives and don't go through the entire lesson. They're much shorter, and so you'll get those emailed to you for free every week if you'll just become a free subscriber. And then also go and subscribe to my other YouTube and podcast channel, Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions, because I teach those on there, and they're much shorter because I'm not doing the whole lesson. I'm just doing applications. So join me on all of those places. Only one paid option, and all the rest of those things are free. And then also on social media at Live Through Jesus. And then I'll see you back next week. Thanks, and have a good day.